We are Movie Geeks, the show. Welcome to We Are Movie Geeks, the show. We Are Movie Geeks. My name is Tom Stockman. I'm here with
Michelle McHugh
and
Jim Batts.
This is volume one, number one of We Are Movie Geeks, the show. We do have a lot of experience being on the radio, though, so this should go pretty smoothly. Like I said, my name is Tom Stockman. I am creative editor at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. And my favorite movies of all time are Once Upon a Time in the West, Taxi Driver, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, King Kong, Bride of Frankenstein, Unforgiven, The Godfather, Hard Times, Jason and the Argonauts, and Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill. There's my top 10 of all time right there. My favorite movie star is Charles Bronson. I also like Vincent Price and Clint Eastwood. My favorite movie directors are Mario Bava, Sergio Leone, and Russ Meyer, but they're dead. I guess as far as living directors go, I really like Clint Eastwood and Woody Allen, and I guess Marty Scorsese's not too bad. I've been writing for We Are Movie Geeks since November of 2008. My very first thing I wrote was a review of Quantum of Solace, which was, of course, the second Daniel Craig James Bond film, and I've been writing for We Are Movie Geeks ever since as creative editor. Michelle?
Hi. Let's see. My favorite movies are Jaws, Alien. I do love all the spectacle, the big, you know, old Hollywood spectacle like Lawrence of Arabia, which David Lean, then one of my favorite directors. Ridley Scott's one of my favorite. Spielberg. Another one of my favorites. My favorite movie stars would have to be some of the maybe the older Hollywood. Vivian Leigh, Peter O'Toole, and I've been with Movie Geeks since its inception. So we're talking 2008, and I'm more of the managing editor, so I'm more in charge of the doing the news and the trailers and keeping the site running on a daily basis. So, and we have a lot of fabulous contests. We hold national contests, local contests. So yeah, we're excited about starting our first show here on STL.
Indeed. Jim Batts.
Okay. See, well, my favorite movies, I guess I would start with, let's say The Adventures of Robin Hood, let's see, Raiders of the Lost Ark, the first Star Wars, or I guess it's called Episode 4, A New Hope, Pinocchio, any of the Toy Story films, Psycho, Adventures of Robin Hood, Singing in the Rain, Wizard of Oz.
What movies aren't your favorite? Maybe that would be a simpler question.
Oh, let's see. Well, usually I start with Adam Sandler, but I don't know. But favorite movie stars, well, not Adam, but I would put in there Errol Flynn, Harold Lloyd, Buster Keaton, Clark Gable. As far as getting closer to today, I really enjoy Emma Stone and Jennifer Lawrence right now. I'm getting a kick out of most of what George Clooney does. Tom Hardy is very interesting. As far as directors, I guess we could go back to Michael Curtiz again with the in the classic Hollywood films there. Also Alfred Hitchcock, Spielberg, Martin Scorsese. Lately I've been enjoying a lot of the films from David O. Russell and just about anything from the Pixar guys. So, and see, I've been writing for the Geek site, I guess, since 2010. I'm not sure it was my first film I reviewed, but one of the early ones was The Kids Are All Right, the film with Mark Ruffalo and Annette Bening and Julianne Moore. So,
all right, well, good. First thing we're going to talk about, since it is Monday morning, and the dust has settled at the box office. Michelle's going to talk a little bit about the box office results for this past weekend. This weekend, which would have been May 30th and 31st, 2015.
Correct. Dwayne The Rock Johnson creates a seismic box office experience in 60 international territories as Warner Brothers' Earthquake Adventure San Andreas takes the top spot with $60 million. The film also shook North American theaters with a number one opening of $53.2 million for an impressive $113.2 million global debut. So, yeah, people around the world loved it. And
so 54 U.S. 54. That was a little more than they expected, was it not?
But I'm not surprised. Dwayne, The Rock, he's like gold. I'm telling you, this guy. Yeah. So, but it was still kind of overall, it was weak at the box office, mm-hmm. just overall. San Andreas was number one, Pitch Perfect 2, still holding on, number two spot. Tomorrowland, Disney's Tomorrowland, was number three. Mad Max Fury Road from Warner Brothers is at number four. And Avengers, Age of Ultron, rounded out the top five. However, Aloha.
You know, San Andreas was not the only disaster to open over the weekend.
That's the true disaster, is
that's
Aloha.
Right.
Yeah.
Phew, man.
Jim, you saw Aloha.
I survived Aloha. I will say that.
Why do you think it did so poorly?
Well,
it's a bad movie?
Well, it's a bad film. I don't think any of the stars were out there selling the thing, so I'm sure that didn't really help. They weren't, you know, appearing with any of the Jimmys or anything like that. It's a mess. It's a narrative mess. It kind of just shifts gears every 10 or 12 minutes there. It makes waste of a terrific cast.
And a terrific writer-director.
Oh, yeah, Cameron
Crowe, who people love.
Yeah, but in the last 15 years, I guess what Almost Famous was 2000.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's been happening to him over the last few years.
Interestingly, it's only the eighth film he's directed. Aside from a couple shorts and a couple of documentaries, he's yeah, you're right. Since Almost Famous, and before that, of course, was Singles and Jerry Maguire, and he sort of rested his career on those three films, as far as I can tell.
He was really involved with the CD. We're giving away the CD, the score, the soundtrack. Yeah. He was heavily involved in putting that together.
Well, he clearly loves music. He was a music journalist before he became a director and writer.
Yeah. I mean, it's got a terrific pop soundtrack, but I hate to say it, a lot of the stars, they're pairing up Bradley Cooper with Emma Stone, and they just don't have any chemistry, and characters just sort of shift their motivations and just change their personalities on a whim. From what I've read over the past weekend, that this was heavily edited. I'm wondering if there were just too many cooks spoiling the broth, I guess, or spoiling the poi, since this is set in Hawaii. But there's a lot of silliness about the Hawaiian mythology, and Bill Murray has kind of a nothing role in it, and it just kind of lays there, and it's just John Krasinski has very few lines, although he does have one of the funniest scenes in the film. There's a scene where he kind of confronts Bradley because Krasinski has married Bradley's former sweetheart, Rachel McAdam, and they just kind of look at each other and glance and make gestures, and it's subtitled so that we can understand what these male gestures mean. So that's kind of funny.
That sounds a little precious. I haven't seen it, though, but you think with the cast of Bradley Cooper, Emma Stone, Bill Murray,
A-listers.
That would have brought some people out to the theaters, but I think the word of mouth got out. The trailer just looked like a mess.
Oh, yes. Oh, and I gotta say, I think I said earlier that Emma Stone's one of my favorite actresses, and her character for the first half hour or almost half of the film is just so annoying. It's not her fault. It's just an badly written character. Plus, Crowe is falling back on some of his past successes. Krasinski's youngest son is pretty much a clone of Jonathan Lipnicki, his character from Jerry Maguire. He's walking around, always has a camcorder going, always quoting Hawaiian mythology and spewing out these obscure facts all the time. I was like, dude, you covered this already.
Plus, there was a little controversy on it anyways about who was cast in it, and people who are from Hawaii had some problems with it.
Well, that's one of the more interesting subplots in it, is the fact that they have to go talk to the king, the royalty of Hawaii, who's actually played by Hawaiian royalty, by a real fellow playing himself in it. And they're not that happy about having the U.S. stomping around there and the military and all that. So if they'd have just focused on that, that might have been a more interesting film. But it's you know, it's a loss. That,
so Aloha is one to avoid. And how much money did it make over the weekend?
$10 million.
I'm surprised it made that.
Yeah. It did, yeah, I guess it did get the top 10, right?
Yeah, it was number 6.
Yeah. Okay. It's probably going to drop quite a bit next weekend. And then the weekend after that, it'll be at the Dollar Show. And then we will have forgotten.
Well, like Jim said, plus they didn't do any of the press conferences. There was nothing for the press beforehand. Mm. Yeah, so none of the talk show circuit. So, that's very telling. Yeah.
I was surprised to see Tomorrowland in third. I really thought maybe Mad Max and Avengers would have performed a little better than that. We really disliked Tomorrowland.
Yeah, I'm wondering how much it dropped on that second weekend.
It only made $13.8 million. I mean, everybody was seeing The Rock.
Yeah, about 60%, you say? Yeah. That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah, Tomorrowland is just a real mess. I can't express how much I disliked it without using some bad language.
People reviewing it for its intention. It's well intended, but that doesn't make it an entertaining film.
No, and it's got this sort of forced sense of wonder that Disney tends to put in some of their worst stuff, and the plot's all over the place. George Clooney is fine, but he's not really in it even for the first hour or so. I'm a little surprised he picked this terrible script. He usually is smarter about those kind of things. Tomorrowland's another one I think that's going to continue to drop, and we'll probably be out of theaters in a couple weeks. Unlike Mad Max, which we all agree is the best movie so far of 2015.
I'm taking
my kids to see it, even though it's rated R. tomorrow morning, and that'll be the third time I've seen it.
Well, it's a pretty mild R.
It is. In fact, I think they were really shooting for a PG-13. If you look at the scene where the naked woman is up in the cage, they really carefully shot around that.
Right, exactly.
And the blood, there was really not much blood. Yeah. It's a very violent film, but it's really kind of a PG-13 kind of.
And I think women who would stay away from that film really, really need to go see it. Yeah. From the commercials, really, give it a chance. Go see Pitch Perfect 2, fine, but at the same time, go see Mad Max.
Mad Max is so good. It's unexpectedly good. I mean, Road Warrior, I think, is probably my favorite pure action film of all time. When Road Warrior came out in 82, I saw it again and again and again. I just could not get enough of the Road Warrior. And I haven't felt that way about an action film since this new Mad Max movie. I mean, it was bound to disappoint, and yet at the same time, it did not.
It doesn't. Yeah.
Well, we were just hearing from someone a few minutes ago here in the studio saying, oh, I'm tired of the CGI stuff. Yeah. There's very little CGI in Mad Max.
Right.
You know?
There is.
It's stunt guys really giving it their all, and if any film is deserving an Oscar for just the stunts, it's this film.
It's beautifully shot by John Seale, who won the Oscar for English Patient. So he kind of knows how to do the desert, big expansive.
But you're right; it's like the 100 or 200 best stuntmen in the world all just converged on South Africa a couple of years ago and tried to outdo each other. I'm surprised nobody got killed. Maybe somebody did, and they're just covering it up or
something. Great score by Junkie XL, who's doing the upcoming Batman versus Superman.
Oh, and a lot of just crazy stuff, crazy characters,
little cars.
Background characters, that people with no legs and people just doing weird things. This guy with his guitar in the middle of his car chase.
That's the best.
That spews fire.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
It's insane.
It's just so nutty. You just got to love it,
I would love to see that nominated for some Oscars. And it may be.
Yeah. Well, definitely, at art direction, I would think.
Yeah,
it would be.
And some technical. And score. But I don't know. It's kind of a tough call. A movie like that tends not to get Oscar noms. But we'll see. I definitely think it's the best movie of the year. But, the year is only halfway over. Mm. We're seeing Inside Out this week.
Yeah, well, we're going to see that on Wednesday tonight.
Jurassic World next week.
Yeah.
Spy, Melissa McCarthy.
Spy is tomorrow.
That'll do well.
Yep.
I don't think it'll be that. And then there's a bunch of stuff coming out of Christmas, of course, as there always is. So it should be an interesting year. It's shaping up to be an interesting year. And then and number 5, like we said, was Avengers, which we've all seen. Has anybody seen that one more than once?
I have seen it one and a half times.
One and a half times.
Yes. I took in a little bit of it there up until the big reveal on Hawkeye. Mm-hmm. And just to see what it looked like in 2D, to see if the colors popped a little bit more. But the Marvel train keeps rolling along, and you're gearing up for Ant-Man in a few weeks.
Fantastic Four. I guess three Marvel summer.
Yeah, yeah, which is just
if you'd have told, typical. Yeah.
Yeah, if you'd have told me that when I was a kid, you know, there'll be three Marvel comics movies in one summer. I was like, oh, you're nuts.
And they'll each cost $150 million to make. Right? No, I know. It's they've come a long way since the Fantastic Four Roger Corman produced TV movie in 1984. Yeah.
They're actually getting in theaters. The Roger Corman film.
Yeah, or the old Marvel superheroes. Cartoon from the mid-60s, which we've talked about, which doesn't even try in terms of animation.
The Marvel superheroes have arrived!
Oh, yeah, they're kind of charming.
They are. They, yeah. And actually, Marvel, hardcore Marvel fans like those because they're very, very true to the
take the artwork right from the comics.
They do. They snip it out, and they don't even animate it. They just kind of move it around with their hands, and I guess there was a camera above.
Yeah. And you got John Vernon, Dean Wormer from Animal House being the voice of the Submariner and Tony Stark. Yeah,
yeah,
sounds great.
Yeah, we love those. Yeah, but I'm not as big a superhero fan as you guys are. I found the Avengers kind of a lot of kind of overstuffed, let me just say. And somebody who's not a comic book fan isn't going to embrace it as much as others might, just because I think they just put in a little too many characters. It started out with a couple of new superheroes doing what they do, and I just thought, who the heck are these people? And but it is a really good movie. I'm not.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's got Josh Whedon's script, and he's very, very witty there. He's got some great one liners in it, so it's terrific in that aspect. And the choir moments are good too.
Yeah.
I like the romance that they have between Black Widow and the Hulk. That's
kind of
nice.
That was a nice touch.
Yeah.
Which means she totally could have her own movie.
Oh, well, she should have had one already.
She should have had one already. Yes, like the Wonder Woman, what DC Comics and Warner Brothers is doing with the Wonder Woman coming out.
Well, Warner Brothers could have done a Wonder Woman movie with a Joss Whedon script about 10 years ago.
Exactly. Thank you. And now we got Supergirl coming up pretty soon on TV, and that's looking good. And
the Suicide Squad is still shooting right now, I guess, right? Yeah, so that'll be interesting.
I cannot emphasize this enough. You need to get out. And I mean now. Because even though this is happening here in California, you will feel it on the East Coast.
But like we said, the number one movie over the weekend was Dwayne Johnson in San Andreas, which we saw last week, and all three of us liked it. I reviewed it over at wearemoviegeeks.com. You can go read my review right now. It's up. I gave it 4.5 out of 5 stars. If I had to do it all over again, I think I'd give it 5 out of 5 stars. It really is one of the best movies of the year so far. But we talked about how much – it's not as good as Mad Max. Okay, I'll give it that, but not too many action films are going to be. San Andreas is a lot of fun. Dwayne Johnson is just a great actor, all right? I've said it. He's not – an actor with a lot of range. He couldn't have played Stephen Hawking last year, but he's just got so much charisma and so much action hero presence that I look forward to seeing anything he's in. And Carla Gugino, am I saying her name right? Jim?
Carla Gugino.
Gugino. Sorry, yes, Carla. Yes. She's probably listening right now. And is
getting
angry.
I hope so.
is really good as his wife, although it's kind of a thankless role, but what the heck. And then this actress named Alexandra Daddario, who is my new. It's my new movie crush, plays their daughter. And she's quite good, too. She is just a mesmerizing, shapely little screen.
And, Tom, how
right
old
there.
Is she? How
29, 29. Yeah,
but
I
she's
it
playing
up.
A 16, seven,
18
year college.
So 18.
18, yeah, right.
Yeah. Beautiful young actress. And she's fine, too. Who else is in it? Paul Giamatti.
Giamatti gives it that little,
That's kind of a thankless role. It's kind of a cliched role. He's the concerned scientist who spends almost all of the movie in his office drawing diagrams and looking at monitors and muttering, oh, this doesn't look good. We have to warn people. He gets a lot of lines like that. But somebody has to play that role, and I don't think anybody could have done it any better than Paul Giamatti. And then what people are going to go see is – I want to go see it for is the special effects, and that certainly does not disappoint. The special effects are mind-boggling, and it's becoming a cliche to say that, but the CGI has just gotten so good, you don't notice any flaws in it. At least I don't. They do things with water and
what's good is they don't give away everything in the trailers and the TV spots. There are some really good surprises in the film as far as disaster scenes. So I like that.
Yeah. What do you think of I'll send it to you, Jim.
Oh, I guess I'm kind of the dissenting opinion here.
Get out of here.
Yeah, I don't know. Seeing thousands of people killed is not my idea of fun, I guess. I'm just kind of a party pooper, I suppose. You know, I'm the guy that's going to, you know, jump on the table and, you know, do something, you know, rude with the punch or something there at this party, I suppose. But no, I just, that's what I kept on thinking. I was like, oh, you know, and the CGI is good, but there was kind of a charm seeing those model buildings
right.
toppling over. Of course, I wouldn't cut it today, I understand. But, you know, when they aren't dealing with the buildings collapsing, the script is just kind of full of cliches. And, you know, I was kind of hoping that they would have had more fun with Giamatti's part. They could have given him a pipe or maybe one of those jackets with the patches on the elbows.
And, like they always, in the original.
And they could have said, Dr. De Brainerd, what's going to happen? And he could take off his horn-rimmed glasses and say, we're doomed or something
kind of
like
in 2012. Well, 2012, they had a little more.
This was a much better script than 2012. Right, 2012 right. had a lot of really dumb jokes. And this really, I thought they played it pretty straight.
Oh, yeah.
You know, more or less.
Much more.
And I was really expecting the script to be worse than it was. There's a joke where he lands his ex-wife on a baseball field on a parachute. And she says, I haven't gotten you to second base in a long time. And everybody laughed. But that's really the only goofy, outrageous, mm-hmm. funny line in the
could
whole movie.
More.
I thought they played it, you know, fairly straight.
Well, one of the script writers is Carlton Cuse, I think mm-hmm. is how you pronounce
right.
his name, who was responsible for one of the greatest TV shows ever, Lost. And I was expecting a bit more. And, you know, Giamatti does what he can with the role, but it felt like this could have been played by William H. Macy or Stanley Tucci or, you know, Danny Glover, any you know, actor of a certain age that could you know, look kind of studious and collegiate. You know, the whole, you know, subplot with, you know, the Rock's, or, you know, Dwayne Johnson's marriage to Carla there, and they're having problems. So I was like, well, you know, I guess a 9.7 Quake works better than Dr. Phil in bringing mm-hmm. marriages back together.
Correct.
That's for certain.
Yeah.
And you know, that there's a whole also a subplot with these two British brothers mm-hmm. that the daughter meets, and it just kind of got a little cloying after a while for me. So, you know, if you like seeing, you know, stuff, you know, go boom, I suppose it's getting into that sort of I think we call it either disaster porn or destruction porn
right.
or something like that,
right.
which the fantasy films have been engaging in quite a bit lately, and I'm not fond of them in the superhero films either. There,
mm-hmm.
you know, at least the Avengers are trying to save people, unlike a certain Kryptonian that I will not mention.
Right.
But,
yeah, millions of people died in that last Superman movie too. I thought it was kind of funny that, you know, Dwayne Johnson's playing an L.A. First responder fireman, and there's the first earthquake actually takes place in Las Vegas, so he's supposed to, you know, mobilize his crew and fly to Vegas and save people there, but he actually commandeers the helicopter for his own little personal mission,
mm-hmm.
which was sort of interesting. You know, heck
yeah.
with everybody else.
Yeah,
I gotta go
right.
save my daughter. But that's okay. And then there's this rather ridiculous scene where, you know, they finally get to San Francisco and the daughter's in a building and Carla Gugino and Dwayne Johnson are in a boat, and they just happen to ride by that same building, and the what a British boy goes, hey, I see some people in a boat, and she says, oh, it's my parents.
Conveniently, you know,
all the millions of people that are
yeah.
laying there dead and not dead in San Francisco, you know, yeah, but. You got to expect that.
Yeah, and I felt bad for Ewan Grufford, who's kind of playing the villainous role, and I was like, this is a thankless part.
But he's become the Richard Chamberlain of Towering Inferno. He became...
You know, he was not too bad of a Reed Richards a few years ago in the first stab at doing the Fantastic Four. But here,
right.
he's just playing such a despicable character. I guess he's supposed to represent the 1% or so. It's like, yeah, get that rich guy, you know, yeah. that sort of thing. And, you know, talking about ridiculous, the opening sequence is so ridiculous where the Rock
girl.
Is going in to rescue this girl in this van, and it tumbles down this hill. And I think she would have been crushed on
yeah.
the first somersault.
Yeah, right.
yeah and I was like,
how does she survive?
And they find her, and she's got a few scratches.
Yeah.
And she's just, they said, how are you? And she says, oh, I'm a little nauseous. What?
And then he goes, get her on the phone. And he calls her, and she picks up the phone. And she says, hello? Instead of,
yeah, most people would have been passed out.
Oh,
but I so appreciated how Dwayne Johnson has become this generation's Charlton Heston.
Yeah.
He really,
they
I mean,
the
think
same
about,
jawline, I believe.
Think about the disaster movies that, you know,
the
we're going to talk about.
Sure.
But he has totally taken on that role.
Well, he's got a better sense of humor, I think, than Chuck did in those films.
You know, Chuck, but you need somebody of that stature and that performance and that big Hollywood, not an actor, but a movie star. Mm-hmm. You need a movie star. The Rock is a movie star, and you need that to pull this kind of movie off.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of disaster movies over the past, I don't know, 10 or 15 years. You've had Deep Impact and Armageddon, and then there's all these direct DVD ones. I think Corman's produced a few of them.
Right.
I
guess,
what, the Sci-Fi Channel stuff?
Yeah,
the Sci-Fi Channel stuff. I haven't really watched too many of them, and the ones I have watched are pretty cheesy, even Sharknado. I guess with special effects, anybody can do special effects on their laptop these days.
Right.
It's gotten cheaper and cheaper to do large-scale effects. But really, who doesn't love the original disaster movies from the 70s? That was the key period of disaster movies. The golden age, I should say, of disaster movies. And I think it all started with Airport. Was that 1970?
Yep.
Yeah.
With Dean Martin and Jacqueline Bisset.
Guerrero, listen to me. They know about you on the ground. You'll kill yourself for nothing if you explode that bomb. Give me the case.
Oh,
that was another thing.
Helen Hayes and
the disaster movies of old, of the 70s, like you said, Tom, they had an A-list cast.
They did.
The cast was like jam-packed, and everybody jumped on board.
Yeah. Well, and in the posters, they always had the photos and little boxes on a little horizontal rolls at the bottom of the poster, which was great. I think. Like I say, Airplane was the first one. That was a huge hit in 1970. Helen Hayes won an Oscar for that.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we had Poseidon Adventure in 72. Who doesn't love the Poseidon?
In the early morning hours of New Year's Eve, Gene Hackman, Ernest Borgnine, Red Buttons, Carol Lindley, Roddy McDowell, Stella Stevens, Shelley Winters, Jack Albertson, Pamela Sue Martin, Arthur O'Connell, Eric Shea, and Leslie Nielsen were aboard the SS Poseidon when it was hit by a 90-foot tidal wave.
That's right.
One of my all-time favorites. And another thing I noticed, in the Poseidon Adventure, the lead was Gene Hackman. In Earthquake, the lead was Charlton Heston. And both of those leads die at the end.
Oh, yeah. They killed killed off the lead every time.
Yeah, but they would never have killed off Dwayne Johnson.
Well, that's another one of my problems with San Andreas. There's a scene where they're trying to, do CPR on somebody, and it goes on forever in San Andreas. And I'm just sitting there going, you don't have the guts to take out this character. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, but I was a little jealous of Dwayne Johnson doing those chest compressions. I won't go into detail.
I wasn't going to say who it was.
But it's like I was waiting for either the mother character or the father to get killed off. I'm like, they're all going to live. That's, disaster movies somebody was dying. Either both leads, although Towering Inferno, they came really close to it. Paul Newman survives, Steve McQueen survives, but everybody else, you're gone.
Yeah.
And all those, all the early disaster. Another theme running through it: John Williams, the great John Williams, scored. I went back and looked; he scored all those movies.
And I think another theme would be George Kennedy.
Yes,
wasn't George Kennedy in pretty much in all those movies?
And he's always yelling at his plane. Yeah.
He was in all five. Was there five? No, four of the Airport.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
But I just watched those all recently, within the past year, and those actually got better as they went along.
Because the best is Airport 77, where it goes in the
best
drink.
Is Airport 79, the Concorde.
Oh no! We're gonna have to have melee over this.
Does that have one of the jets is animated in there? It's like a cartoon.
Yeah. Yes,
that's too funny.
Oh no! But where they all go in the drink, and you got Lee Grant and Christopher Lee and Darren McGavin.
79, boo. And you had Sylvia Christel is the stewardess, and she goes into the cockpit where Alan Delon and George Kennedy are the pilots, and she said, "Oh, you handsome men in this cockpit," or something like that. And George Kennedy goes, "That's why they call it a cockpit." Just some of the worst dialogue. It's really a riot.
Yeah, he's had a bigger role in 79, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's one of the pilots. The other ones, he was like the foreman or the security guy or something.
He was in the
like
control
that.
Tower, pretty much. You know,
he played different characters. I could be mistaken.
Was it Buck something or?
Oh,
whatever.
Maybe you're right.
Yeah. But it was kind of ridiculous. And I would say one of my favorites is at the end of the whole genre, which kind of I guess hit the nail in the coffin, is the Zucker and Abrams Airplane.
Yeah.
That was 79.
Which is
Sorry, I don't understand.
Cuddy say can't hang.
Oh, stewardess, I speak jive.
Oh, good.
Still very, very funny. It's like watching, you know, Mad Magazine brought to life.
Correct.
You know, there's just something funny going on in every corner of the screen, it seems like.
But something like San Andreas is pretty much nonstop. Something like Earthquake, I did watch it again recently.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a lot of drama. You know, it's he's cheating on Ava Gardner plays his wife. He's cheating on her with, I think, Genevieve Bujold. And there's a lot of that and a lot of
there's
dialogue.
There's a lot of drama. There's always
the special effects sequences.
Well, doesn't Lauren Green play Ava Gardner's father?
Yes.
Maybe 4 or 5 years older than her.
Yeah.
But there's always somebody, there's always marital problems. That's always the underlying in all these early disaster movies.
Yeah. That's why in San Andreas, you know,
of course
they're having the problem because it's the papers, but it's not because of infidelity or abuse or anything like that. It's because of a law. So they got to make it, you know, easier for them to get back to, you know, together. And do they get, I'm not going to tell, but you know.
Pre-CGI, and of course the special effects in Earthquake did seem pretty mind-boggling in 1974.
A superb cast. Charlton Heston, Ava Gardner, George Kennedy, Lorne Greene, Genevieve Bujold, Richard Roundtree, Marjo Gortner, Barry Sullivan, plus the city of Los Angeles and its millions of people living, loving, planning, fighting until nature's most violent upheaval forces them to battle and claw for life itself.
Oh, they were.
And I saw it in Censor Round.
Oh.
Which was, did you see it in Censor Round?
No, I didn't. I didn't. But they kind of attempted that with San Andreas.
Well, I attempted it at the Way Out Club.
Years
ago. But Censor Round was basically four big giant subwoofers in each corner of the movie theater that they would set to rumble, and the whole movie theater would shake a bit. I remember seeing it and having a lot of fun with it when I was, I guess, 12 years old in 1974. But the special effects were pretty good, a little cheesy. One of my big disappointments was the Hindenburg. Remember that one?
Oh, that's
George C. Scott and Anne Bancroft. Mm-hmm. And it goes on. You're waiting for the Hindenburg to blow up. So it goes on and on. There's all this drama. I think William Atherton was the mad bomber.
He was. Mm-hmm.
And then at the very end, instead of like sinking some money into a special effects budget, they switch it to black and white, and then they show the famous Hindenburg crash sequence that was filmed when it really happened and sort of edit the actors in and out of that.
Right.
And I don't know if that seemed innovative at the time. I don't know what they were thinking. Maybe they ran out of money because they hired all these big stars. But in retrospect, that's a pretty cheap shortcut.
Yeah, speaking of cheap, though, do you recall, I think I got the title right, I believe it was Tidal Wave?
Oh, yeah, that also had Lorne Greene.
Yeah, that was a Corman import, right?
Yeah, it was a Japanese film, and it was made by Toho Studios, I believe, and they brought it over. It had some pretty cool special effects, a lot of good miniature work, and they refilmed all these scenes with Lorne Greene, kind of like they did with Raymond Burr and Godzilla a couple decades earlier. You know, Lorne Greene probably in an office looking at some monitors and acting dramatic, and then they would cut in this Japanese stuff as well.
Then out of those, that's when they started hitting, you know, Outer World. Does that, you know, that's when we're coming around to Meteor and then segueing.
Meteor,
which I still I love. You know, Sean Connery and Brian Keith playing the Russian and Natalie Wood. You know, and that's when you segue to, you know, Deep Impact, which, you know, I still have guilty pleasure
Deep
for.
Deep Impact was like 98.
But
really there weren't, there may have been some disaster movies in the 80s, but really I think Meteor sort of bombed.
Yeah.
And there was probably a good decade or so where, I don't know what they were doing in the 80s. Other things.
Well, then when Time Ran Out, I think, was Irwin Allen's last
William
shot
Holden
at it.
Paul
Newman and Jackie Bisset, wasn't it?
Yeah, and William Holden was in there, too.
Oh, he was, But that kind of fizzled out with that, I suppose. And The Swarm.
Right.
With Andy Griffith and Olivia de Havilland.
Fred McMurray.
Yeah.
But the only thing I would say about San Andreas, there could have been a lot more A-list, you know, cast in it. Like Irwin Allen.
They could have done that.
Irwin Allen used to get them all together. And like we were saying on the posters below, it was, you know, come and see all these, you know, actors.
Okay. So San Andreas was the big one in more ways than one. There were a couple of smaller films that opened in St. Louis this past weekend. Jim and I went and saw The Connection Friday night, which is playing over at the Tivoli. I thought it was a pretty terrific little tense French thriller, and I really don't tend to like French films in general, but this was about heroin dealers in France, a true story of heroin dealers in France in the 70s and 80s, really the same gang that The French Connection was based on. They touch on some of the same plot elements from that. and it starred
Jean Desjardins.
Jean Desjardins is the
from the Artiste.
Yes, who won the Oscar for starring in The Artist. He plays a prosecutor in France who's going after these drug dealers. Did you like it?
Crusading magistrate. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I love to see the 70s fashions.
Yeah.
They were terrific. A lot of it is set in the disco that the main bad guy buys called Krypton. And it's terrific. It's sort of a family drama also because Jean Desjardins' work is keeping him from his family and the wife is all concerned about him. And there's some great shootouts with the bad guy. It and some good car work and car chases.
I didn't expect the tragic twist.
Yeah.
It really made me sad. You hang out with this character for over 2 hours. It's about 2 hour and 15 minute long film. And something happens to him that I really didn't see coming. I guess maybe that happened in real life. It was based on a true story.
I forget the name of the main bad guy, the drug kingpin, but he's very good too. You know, and it's sort of a mirror the mirror image of each other in it. You know, they're both family men.
He was good in another French action thriller I saw last year called Point Blank. Not to be confused with the great Lee Marvin movie, Point Blank. But I can't think of that actor's name off the top of my head either. But, yeah.
But he's good. He's good, yeah. He's good.
So I do recommend, or Jim and I both recommend, The Connection. It was reviewed by Michael over at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. I don't think he quite liked it as much as we did.
Yeah, I thought it was a little too derivative of the 70s action films.
He thought he'd seen it all before. I mean, it's hard to come up with something original, especially a movie about drug dealers in the 70s, but I thought it was really good.
Yeah, very stylishly done.
Stylishly directed.
Good editing,
good use of music. And the other movie that we want to talk about briefly is the old lady movie, as I keep calling it. I'll See You in My Dreams.
Yeah, we both saw that, but I guess you don't have any memory of it there. I enjoyed it more than you, I guess. But I guess I can identify with the 70-year-old women, I guess, more than you, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. You're older than me. It was a nice movie. I didn't dislike it. Blythe Danner, it's a great role for her.
And Sam Elliott is really charming in it.
Who doesn't like Sam Elliott?
Yeah. He just picked up a Critics' Choice Award last night. Yeah,
for Justified.
For a TV show, yeah. Oh, okay. But no, he's a lot of fun in this. He's kind of, got the old sly dog look to him. He's fun. But the real surprise in it for me is a young actor you may not be familiar with named Martin Starr, who has been kicking around TV for quite a bit.
He's the pool cleaner?
Yeah, he's the pool cleaner. Okay. Yeah, the relationship that he has with Blythe Danner's character is very very warm, very interesting.
It is, but it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Does this guy not have better things to do than hang out with some old lady? What was his motivation? What was he trying to get from her?
I think they somehow connect intellectually in there. But he's terrific. I've loved him since he was Bill Haverchuk on the classic Freaks and Geeks TV show, The King of the Geeks, in that, which was produced by Judd Apatow, actually. And as far as movies goes, you've seen him in Knocked Up and Super Bad and films like that. And he was had a major role in the Veronica Mars movie that was out a couple of years ago. He's a terrific actor, mostly TV stuff now. He's also did the TV show Party Down, and right now he's on Silicon Valley on HBO. Very good. So,
That's a great show.
That's over at the Frontenac, and I suspect they'll be keeping that 2 or 3 or 4 weeks. That'll do well with especially the crowd that likes to go see movies at the Frontenac.
The older ladies
who are shopping at Saks and they want to set their bags down for a couple of hours and get off their feet and wander into the theater, and they say, "Oh, this looks good."
Oh yeah, and she's got we didn't mention her friends. There's a St. Louis connection to one of them. One of her pals is June Squibb from Vandalia, Illinois, who was nominated for Nebraska. Who's very funny in it. Not quite as a major role as Rhea Perlman, who's got a really nice role in it. And Mary Kay Place is in it from The Big Chill.
And these four old ladies, they sit around and they smoke pot, and then they go to the grocery store and buy a cart full of munchies. It was like something out of The Golden Girls or something. That was a bad scene.
That's the worst scene in the film.
Hey, actually, you still have any of that medical marijuana?
It's got to warm up.
I know what I'm doing. All right. Let's get this going.
You guys having a party?
They get pulled over by a cop and all that. We're going to be giggly and cute here for a few minutes. But it's a little tougher than you might think. It's not bad.
So I think we've covered all the movies that are currently playing. Upcoming this Friday, we've got Spy, which we haven't seen. We're seeing that later this week. Entourage, we haven't seen. You're seeing that tonight. Insidious 3, we haven't seen. I don't think they're going to show us that one, although I'm kind of looking forward to it.
Have a review up on it. One of our LA critics will review it.
And Love and Mercy opens Friday, which is the Brian Wilson story. You guys both saw it. I did not.
Oh, yes. Excellent.
Yes, highly recommended. Oh. I put it right up there as far as film musical biographies. I would put it up with the Buddy Holly story or Amadeus or something like that. It's terrific.
Yeah, and it's not the Beach Boys movie, so don't think you're going to see a biopic on the Beach Boys. It's more, it's his story. Yeah.
Did they address Dennis Wilson's drowning?
They do talk about it just a little bit. Yeah. It's not recreated or anything like that.
Right.
But I think when Brian's character meets Elizabeth Banks' character, mm-hmm. he mentions that to her. But what was interesting to me, but there is a lot of the Beach Boys stuff, and it was interesting was the clash between the Beach Boys. I think Mike Love was didn't like the psychedelic stuff and this experimental stuff, and wanted to get back to songs about surfing and having fun and chasing girls and all that.
Let's talk about the actors. They have two different actors playing Brian Wilson, correct?
Which is really unique. Paul Dano plays the young version of Brian Wilson, and John Cusack plays the older version. So
they share mannerisms. That's a tricky thing
to do.
Frankly, I don't think they look anything like each other. When I see the trailer, I go, Paul Dano's not going to grow up to look like John Cusack.
Right.
There's ways of getting around that if the actors are good enough.
A little prosthetic work
They do such a great job with it. Oh. And Paul Giamatti plays the bad guy.
Him again.
I know. He goes, good guy, bad guy. I'm picking up.
We've played with everyone. Sinatra, Elvis, you. Blowing our minds. If you want to continue to see him, you should know Brian is a very, very sick man.
Yeah, this is the script that he should definitely. I couldn't see another actor playing this part I could see somebody else being the professor in San Andreas.
Exactly.
This is right in his wheelhouse. This is close to his breakthrough role in the Howard Stern film.
Pig vomit.
Oh yes.
But he's the one who the character got Brian Wilson on all these drugs and was just, he was so out of it by the time Elizabeth Banks' character comes on the scene and how they get him off all these drugs. And it's a great score. It's a score by Atticus Ross, and we talked to him, so we'll have his interview up later this week.
Who's going to review that, Jim?
I think Michael's going to review Elizabeth Banks having a great summer. I mean, this is a great follow-up to her directing work in Pitch Perfect, too. And she does look lovely in these 70s fashions.
Oh, good for her.
She's
a hottie. Is this going to open wide, or do you think it's just going to play at the...
I think it's going to be select theaters.
I wish it were.
It's roadside attractions.
Yeah.
Well, I think the last several John Cusack movies went straight to Redbox.
And he's excellent in this.
He's got a bad rep right now, so this might help repair it or remind people what a good actor he is. But he's good in it. But Paul Dano is spectacular as the young Brian Wilson. This could really be his breakthrough role, and I wouldn't be surprised. Well, if it were opening later on in the year, I would say he could get an Oscar nom.
But coming up, they have the big juggernaut on June 12th, which is Jurassic World.
Yeah.
She's a highly intelligent animal. She will kill anything that moves.
Oh, God.
Universal just released a roadblock broadcast of the original Jurassic Park will be hosted by three-time Academy Award winner Steven Spielberg and Chris Pratt, beginning on June 5th and concluding on June 6th. They'll introduce a 2-minute exclusive sneak preview of Jurassic World, which arrives in theater, like we said, June 12th. Spielberg and Pratt will share their respective memories of Jurassic Park and drive to a debut of a 2-minute exclusive sneak preview of Jurassic World, which will air during the program. Once again, this is on June 5th and June 6th. So if you want to revisit Jurassic Park before you go see Jurassic World, June 5th and 6th are the days to do it.
Cool. Something to look forward to. It's going to be a great summer. Also in St. Louis, some other things to look forward to. St. Louis is a great town if you're a movie buff. There's always something going on. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I went to the abandoned Limp Brewery, and I walked in, and I walked up and down some flights of stairs. It was dark in there, and then I found about 12 people sitting around a screen watching William Friedkin's cruising. I mean, every night there's something weird like that just going on here in town. And one of the best things, well, two great things I want to talk about. I host the Real Late at the Tivoli every Friday and Saturday night at the Tivoli. It's the midnight show. This past weekend we had Kung Fu Killers, which is a new movie. But usually we show a cult classic for college students. Cult classics are a little different than they were when I was a teenager. But usually it's like stuff from the 80s or 90s. This weekend we have Pee-wee's Big Adventure, which is one of my favorites. It's really a movie that I think has gotten better with age. It's so funny.
Pee-wee Herman is Pee-wee Herman.
Hello!
In Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Be sure and tell him Large Marge sent ya.
Yeah, we just I think they had it at Shafley about a year ago, and yeah. I was like, this really holds up.
I know you are, but what am I?
And yeah, Tim Burton's breakthrough film, yeah.
No doubt. It is so funny. So that'll be this Friday night. And what I do when I host this thing, I always write up some custom trivia questions. Like, what kind of cereal was Pee-wee eating in the opening scene?
I pity the fool that don't know that.
As, of course, Mr. T cereal, which was a real thing, actually. I'm going to have to get a box of that and bring it to the Tivoli this week. And then I'll give away, they give me some popcorn coupons to give away, and I'll pull some DVDs out of my personal collection, and I may even go down to Allied and get some T-shirts or something from a new movie. So I always have a lot of giveaway stuff, and it's always a lot of fun. That's Pee-wee's Big Adventure. The following weekend is The Last Starfighter. Wasn't that considered the first sort of CGI film?
Yeah, one of the very early ones there. I want to say it's about 84, 85, something like that. And one of the last roles for Robert Preston, actually. Oh, okay. And, what was his name? Lance Guest is the lead in that? I know that one of the gals from Night of the Comet is in there.
Kelly Mulroney?
No, the other one, I guess. Yes. Elizabeth something or something. Yeah. But Catherine Mary Stewart, I think, is her name. Yeah. So it was one of the first films to use a lot of CGI.
Yeah, and I just suspected the CGI just looks absolutely horrible compared to, San Andreas. But, that'll happen.
That was
almost 30 years ago. So things have come a long way. So that's this weekend at the Tivoli at midnight, Real at the Tivoli. $8 gets you in, and you may go home with a prize. Also, our friend Andy over at DestroyTheBrain.com does his monthly film series, which he calls Late Night Grindhouse. This is like the greatest thing in St. Louis. He chooses usually a cult horror movie, gory, cheesy, sleazy exploitation film. Not necessarily horror, but usually an exploitation from the 70s or 80s. And he often shows 35mm prints, not all the time. Last month they did Night of the Comet. They've done Gates of Hell this year. And
Savage Streets is a non-horror film.
A lot of Lucio Fulci stuff, The Beyond and Zombie. And
God Told Me
House
To.
By the Cemetery, God Told Me To was earlier this year. That was a Larry Cohen film from the 70s. He does a great job of picking, he makes some pretty bold picks. I'm always happy with the stuff Andy does. He did Death Wish 3 earlier this year.
Yeah, that was crazy.
That was amazing. I mean, I watch that movie all the time, but just seeing it on the big screen warmed my heart. This weekend is Andy's fifth anniversary. Apparently he's been doing this exactly 5 years. And what he's come up with, in addition to making new T-shirts and cozies he's going to be giving away, he's come up with something called Grindhouse Apocalypse. It is a trailer reel, a solid two-hour trailer reel of, and it's on 35mm film, of sleazy, cheesy horror trailers from the 60s and 70s and 80s. He's being a little secretive about what movies are on the trailer reel. He did give me I asked him if he could give me a couple titles, and he said, Blood Freak. Are you familiar with Blood Freak? Blood Freak's this... Yeah. You familiar with that one?
It's not one of the H.G. Lewis films.
No, it's about a guy who's made in the mid-70s, about a guy who smokes marijuana, and his head turns into a turkey's head. It's amazing. It's really an amazing movie. I remember renting it on VHS and just laughing.
Miserable body. See Blood Freak, horrifying addicted monster whose thirst for an addict's blood will lead you to a horror beyond belief. Blood Freak, to survive, addicts must die.
So that's one of the trailers he's showing. It's really funny. He is showing, and then one of the other trailers he mentioned is The Gruesome Twosome, which is a Herschel Gordon Lewis movie.
Oh, yeah.
And that's one about a mother and son who scalp women. And it's famous for its opening, where you've got some styrofoam mannequin heads with wigs talking to each other for like 5 minutes. That's how the movie opens. I don't know if they have clips of that in the trailer or not.
They're not. Don't try to do any lip movement or anything.
No,
like that.
No. It's terrible. It's really a terrible movie. I'm sure the 2 or 3 minute trailer is going to be a lot of fun. But I, and I'm a big fan of Herschel Gordon Lewis, but that's one of his worst films, which is saying a lot. And Psycho from Texas, which is another 70s classic. It was a real early role for Linnea Quigley. It's just really, it's about this sweaty guy who just drives around and kills people.
Psycho from Texas, the shocking story of a madman who roars out of Texas and sends a beautiful young girl's dreams down the drain.
But those are the only three, but if that's an indication of what he's got on this trailer reel, we're in for a big, sleazy, fun, sweaty treat. This weekend at Late Night Grindhouse. What else is coming up in St. Louis?
Art Hill Film Series, 4 weeks in July, and they're back-to-back starting with Back to the Future, the 40th anniversary of Jaws, Sound of Music, and Clueless. And that is that won't be the first weekend of July. It'll start the second weekend after the holiday.
But they're all in July. I guess we have 5 weekends this.
All of July, yes.
In July this year. We've gone to that in the past. It's always a lot of fun.
That's
thousands
fun.
Of people.
Yeah. And it's free, and it's, you know, the art museum.
Kind of they got the food trucks there,
yep.
Right?
Food trucks,
art museum's
music.
Open.
Yeah, they give away ice cream and popcorn.
And it's a great way, if you have not seen these films, it's a great way to, you know, first time. There's a lot of people who have not seen many. They showed The Birds 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. The majority, I don't think, had seen the movie. So that was a lot of fun.
As long as the weather's nice. You can't go wrong. So we'll probably get a bunch of people to get out there and go see that. I think we're going to wrap up our first episode of We Are Movie Geeks, the show. There's going to be a lot of stuff to talk about next week. We'll be able to give you reviews of Spy and Entourage, and we can talk about Insidious 3 and other topics. So signing off, I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Betts.
And listen to us again next week.
Black leather, black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather rock. Black leather, black leather, smash, smash, smash. Black leather, crash, crash, crash. Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock. Crash, crash, crash. Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock.